You're listening to Menders with clinical psychologist and leadership consultant, Dr. Nicola DePaul. Each week, get a dose of real-world inspiration from free-thinking leaders, top clinicians, healthcare innovators, and myself. Looking for quick fixes or standard management tools? Try someplace else. Motivated to maximize the resilience and diversity of your team, sustain your momentum as a leader, and transform your healthcare system? Welcome to Menders. Welcome back to Menders. I am so delighted to have you listening today. And let me tell you, today is a treat. I invited one of my favorite clients who very generously was willing to share about her experience working with me. And whether or not working with me is right for you, I hope that this conversation helps you to see how the how-to of what I do working with organizations has a powerful impact on leaders and employees' well-being. So my goal is always to help you feel like this work is sustainable and can be integrated into your everyday processes as leaders in healthcare. So I'm hopeful that this gives you a beautiful glimpse into what that looks like, and hopefully you're able to take some of the ideas that we talk about today and apply them to your own experience. So without further ado, allow me to welcome Dr. Lauren Best.
Lauren, would you introduce yourself and just say a little bit about what you do?
Sure. My name is Lauren Best. I am the deputy service chief for a primary care department at a large healthcare organization. I supervise, my department encompasses about 700 people, and I recently started in my role about a year and a half ago.
Thank you so much. So tell me a little bit about some of the challenges that your system was experiencing. What led you to want to make a change in your system?
Oh, that's a good question. Our healthcare department is experiencing a lot of challenges, like many primary care organizations in the nation and probably the world, dealing with a lot of staff turnover, a lot of burnout, a lot of interpersonal conflict and frustration between different teams. So these things are readily apparent, both, you know, on the daily level and also on more formal assessments like our annual all-employee survey. So it's very clear that we needed to have some kind of an intervention to help people improve their well-being at work, mostly because I just care about our people and want them to have a better experience at work, but also because it does impact performance and it impacts turnover and the overall working environment.
Can you say a little bit more about that? What are those impacts on the system currently, and what would it mean if you were really able to address that kind of dissatisfaction or the burnout and turnover challenges you're having? What would that mean for your healthcare system and for you personally?
Right. So I really look at things like burnout and turnover and conflict as drag on our system. So it takes energy to resolve these conflicts and explore them and figure out what's going on, energy that we should be better putting towards taking care of patients. And the same thing with turnover. Turnover is like the very last stage of workplace dissatisfaction. I'm not talking about people retiring or, you know, their families moving for other personal reasons. I'm talking about people quitting because they're unhappy. And so every time that happens, we lose institutional knowledge. We lose the team dynamic that has been built up. Whatever positives, attributes are gone. And then the team has to start over with a new team member from scratch. And it's really challenging for the individuals on the team. And it's bad for the system. And certainly as a manager, you know, having to find new people and train them and onboard them and have them get up to speed and, you know, deal with all of that is very undesirable. But I think, again, that's the last stage of dissatisfaction. There's so many places to improve things before people get to that point. And that is why, in large part, I reached out to you, Nicola, and, you know, with an eye to trying to remediate this, because it's not just an isolated incident in my system. It is unfortunately fairly widespread. So we need to do something to get onto a better track.
Hey, menders, if you're listening to this and you're a healthcare leader struggling to get a handle on the metrics that matter and you're motivated to improve employee engagement, workplace satisfaction, and overall well-being, listen up. Whether you have a tiny system or a large, complex department, there is a clear path you can take to go from burnout culture to cultural renewal. Go to mendinghealthsystems.com to check out my organizational well-being assessment. This mini course will walk you through an organizational self-evaluation that will help you identify your next steps to boost organizational well-being today. So pause this episode and head to mendinghealthsystems.com right now.
Wow. Yeah. Thank you. So you mentioned wanting to do some early interventions or figure out how can you start creating change in your system before people are just turning over was really important to you. So I guess what did lead you to decide to work with me? Why did that sound like a good idea to you?
Well, I am fortunate that we knew each other from previous work experience together. And so I thought it was a really natural fit because you're familiar with our organization and I know you and you know me and my team and really have a lot of respect for the work that you do. And I feel extremely lucky that you were like willing to work with us. It's quite the reverse, you know, and someone who's willing to tackle such a daunting set of issues. I mean, it feels daunting to me. It's possible you deal with this all the time and this is normal, but to me, it feels like a really big project to try to change our culture and our systems in a way that fosters better well-being. And so I really needed a guide because like I can see that there's a problem, but I don't know how to start fixing it. So that's where you come in. And I feel very lucky that you are willing to work with us.
Oh, well, I'm very honored and honestly it's been really fun for me. So I'm glad it's felt helpful and supportive for you. So can you say a little bit more about what the experience of working with me has been like for you? What has been most useful?
I think for me personally, having someone who has done this before, like simply the, you know, just having being able to break the process down into manageable steps has been extremely helpful. Like having a roadmap so that you're not just trying to, you know, like eat the whale, as they say. But if you can kind of chunk it up into discrete steps, it feels a lot more doable. It may be one of the reasons that things have gotten to such an advanced state in my organization without having been intervened on previously, because this is not a new problem. It's just we're finally trying to tackle it in a systematic way. So just really intentionally thinking through, here's the problem, here's a way or framework to approach it, here are steps and a map, you know, of how to get to where we want to get to. It gives me a much greater sense of security and confidence that we'll actually be able to do this.
Yeah, you're not having to go it alone.
Exactly. Because I honestly don't know how to do that. You know, I'm a doctor, you know, I'm a manager. I don't know how to transform organizational well-being. Like, nobody teaches you this stuff. So I'm very glad to have someone who's done it before guiding us.
Oh, that's awesome. So I know our work together is still in process, but what about our work together has made the biggest impact on your system so far?
Oh, well, we are pretty early, I'd say, in the process. I have a few reflections so far, actually. So one is that we went in with kind of a first initial plan. We started with the plan and then realized we needed to make some adjustments because the system wasn't ready to, like, you know, kind of dive in all the way on the initial plan A. But that doesn't mean, like, you just are like, oh, well, I guess well-being's out this year. You know, we adjusted and you were very helpful in pivoting and, you know, like giving us alternatives. Okay, you know, we tried this one thing, realized we need to course correct a little bit. No problem. You know, we can continue moving forward, but just in a slightly different pathway. So I thought that was great. Let's see, other helpful things. The experience of listening, like I think we're starting to see benefits from just doing some listening sessions, actually, and really talking to people and just non-judgmentally hearing what they have to say. It's one of those diagnostic therapeutic things where it's like it helps people to have that experience of being heard properly, and then also gives us useful tools and some ideas on where to go. So it's been useful all around. And I've been amazed at how willing people have been to talk. I wasn't sure, actually, if we would ask people how they were doing and then just get crickets because people were disengaged or maybe they weren't comfortable talking. But that has not been the experience. And I felt like it was a bit of a risk to, like, put ourselves out there and, like, you know, approach people that way and ask them to talk to us. But it's been great, actually. I've been really pleased.
Yeah, I know something that I hear from healthcare leaders with some frequency is like, what's going to happen if I actually ask the question? Because it seems like they're opening Pandora's box and that feels really intimidating. So do you have any words of wisdom or recommendations for people who might be having that experience, like knowing that there's something that they need and want to address, but it's just really scary to even think about moving there?
I do. My issue was a little different than that. Like, I was just afraid people wouldn't talk at all. But the truth is, people are feeling whatever they're feeling. You either know about it or you don't know about it. So it's like you ask them, it doesn't change how they feel. It's just now you know. So rest assured, you asking them isn't going to make it worse. It's not going to, like, you know, make it your personal responsibility to solve the problems of the world all by yourself. But they're just feeling that already. You're just hearing it. And if that gives anyone any confidence, then I'm glad to share that. That's just my perspective on it.
Yeah, I love that. And like you said earlier, we're still pretty early days with your system. But what kinds of changes have you as a leadership team made, like in your processes, or are there things that you're doing differently as a team, in just in your day-to-day way of interacting with your team or with, you know, with your whole department, you know, as a result of starting this process?
Yeah, I think there's probably many more changes to come. But one thing that I heard really consistently was the need to be, well, for different team members to be respectful in their communications and to be mindful of the hierarchies or the power gradients that are implied in some of the discussions. Like, just because of, you know, physicians or nurses or administrative staff, I mean, there are power gradients here for better or for worse. And, people, I think, forget about that. And so just being really mindful in my communications and the way that I'm expressing myself to people, to just acknowledge that gradient. And when I'm communicating, and I'm trying to model that for others as well. So that's one change that I have personally made. But I hope to see permeate more across the department. So that's just an early instance. We're also doing listening sessions and modeling for the other teams, like amongst the leadership group, like trying to communicate at the top, like as effectively as we can, as inclusively as we can, as respectfully as we can, to set that example and that expectation for everybody. Because I I would be lying if I said that some of those communication breakdowns were, you know, we were immune to it just because we're in management or something. And so having that really hard look at our own internal communication processes has been another productive outcome.
Wow. So you've really been able to do some self-reflection as a leadership team and make those shifts and then more intentionally be modeling.
That's the goal. I mean, I think we're still working on it. I don't think we've finished that work at all, but at least we're aware and are actively working towards it.
I mean, it's really like a lifelong process for all of us.
But makes you feel better.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Yes. Me every day with my child. But I think what you're highlighting is just one of the reasons I love working with leadership teams is because like there's so much power to create transformation within that team, and it really can have such a powerful trickle down effect. And, you know, maybe people aren't always aware of how their own dynamics are impacting their staff. So I just appreciate that you're highlighting
that. Yeah, it's been really illuminating actually. And I'm glad to be taking the time to focus on it, honestly.
Yeah. So that's another question I have is like, how did you get buy-in from, you know, your executive leaders or even your immediate supervisor to focus on this? Because, you know, a challenge that I often hear is that attending to team well-being is really important, but it can be hard to prioritize when it's not the primary metric that an organization or a healthcare system is looking at. So how did you build that buy-in?
I am kind of a ask for forgiveness, not permission person. I mean, my assessment of the situation is not dependent on whether I'm getting you know, a performance bonus out of this or whether my executive leadership at the hospital is aware of or cares. You know, I don't think that changes the importance of this in the slightest to me. I got great buy-in from my immediate leadership team and my own boss, who is not the person necessarily driving this work, but is engaged and is, you know, willing and is a, you know, a willing participant in it. But I think having someone champion it, like I'm happy to be that person because I just think it's incredibly important and it will pay dividends in the other measures down the road, I'm convinced. But I didn't really get like official, you know, approval or something from my executive leadership, nor do I think I need to. You know, I think the importance of it is almost self-evident. But it does take resources and time. And having somebody who's a champion who's willing to put that in is going to be like crucial because this work does not do itself, that's for sure.
Yeah. So for people or organizations who might be struggling to like make that decision to prioritize those mm-hmm. resources, I mean, what do you have to say to them or what? How might you encourage them to take that leap?
Well, I mean, I think it is going to come down to a discussion probably with your own executives. Like if you need to get executive approval to proceed, and I can see that there are probably organizations where that is required. I think having a business case, you know, like this is how much turnover we have. These are our low scores on our employee well-being survey. You know, we think these are correlated nationally, you know, this is sort of the pattern that we're seeing, and we are below the mean, you know, using some kind of data to explain the need and trying to convince your executive leadership that focusing on well-being will actually improve quality or improve some of those, you know, hard outcomes that they often are interested in. The truth is that like turning over a single physician is somewhere around like a quarter to a half $1 million, depending on the system. So if you can prevent even one physician from turning over, you have literally just paid for whatever you've put into this. I can almost guarantee it, you know. So trying to make that case in dollars and cents would probably be what I suggest to someone experiencing that situation. But I actually didn't have to deal with that, luckily.
I appreciate that because I think it can be really easy for people to get caught up in like immediately what's going on and pulling any either financial or time, you know, personnel resources away from clinical care or other duties can be a really hard sell. But I just love that you're highlighting those big picture sort of longer term impacts and also the financial.
One thing that is challenging in my organization is that some of the things that affect people's workplace experience or their well-being are completely outside of our control. I mean, I'll take the COVID pandemic. I mean, like, nobody controls that. Or like what other departments are doing. Sometimes other departments are making decisions that negatively impact ours, and they're not able to change, you know, what they're doing for one reason or another. You know, they have a different mandate or a different mission than us, and we're not harmonized in what our goals are for particular outcomes necessarily. So that I find really challenging. It doesn't mean you can do nothing. I mean, there's still always ways to improve well-being, even if you can't fix the entire hospital and make everybody do everything that you want. But it is challenging to deal with that when the employees bring up stuff and you're like, yeah, I can't change that. But we can instead do this other thing, you know, to try to support each other or to make our own work more efficient, you know, and less chaotic based on this other department's process or something. Sorry, I'm speaking sort of vaguely, but basically what I'm trying to say is I think there's always stuff you can do to make things better, even if you can't solve it completely.
Yeah, I think that's really true. I see that a lot. And I think you're also highlighting what the research actually shows, which is when you as the leader are able to say, this is what I can control, this is what I can't control, and you're really transparent about that, employees tend to actually buy into that, get on board, and it can reduce burnout. Even though you're not fixing anything and it's not always satisfying at all. So I really respect that transparency. And it also highlights something I'm always recognizing that I'm trying to find the balance of, you know, with every team I work with, is like, how do you come up with a systemic leadership response that's effective? And how do you, you know, empower your frontline or your frontline supervisors, your employees, to continue living in a system that's not perfect? So I don't have any easy answers.
Oh, there are no easy answers to this one. But, you know, if we can't change everything, there are some things we have to live with, but we can make the best out of, you know, some of those immovable boulders. You know, you just say, okay, this is here. We have to work around it. It's not going anywhere. We'll keep an eye on that boulder in case there's a way to like pry it loose at some point. But, you know, today we have got to like live with the system that we're in. And find the best way through. So yeah, I think I appreciate that actually about you and the work that you do, which is using research to try to guide some of the advice and decisions, I think is helpful to you. And we try to stick to that as best we can, like what works, what doesn't work. But what you said is, yeah, what we're trying to do with acknowledging stuff that we can't change. But also saying we hear your concerns, employees, and we are, you know, escalating those, and we're not ignorant of those concerns, and we don't, you know, discount the concerns, but like we still have to do our job too.
So helping people feel validated while they're navigating and you're navigating that tension.
Exactly.
So what kinds of leadership teams or health system leadership teams do you think would be a good fit for working with me? Like, who would you recommend work with me?
I can say ours is a very large, very complex public sector institution. And so far, that is going great. So if any of your clients or prospective clients fit that mold, I would encourage them to give it a go.
Awesome. So I guess my last question for you is, like, what value do you see in going slow and really taking, you know, taking a good bit of time for this employee engagement listening phase? Like, how do you see that as being beneficial instead of jumping into interventions, say, based on the all employee or, you know, the survey data you already have?
That's an easy one because, you know, surveys are great, but they have major limitations because not everybody responds usually to a survey. And the questions are usually pretty proscribed unless it's some kind of free response. And so you get a a kind of a bellwether of like, yeah, there's a problem. You know, the survey can kind of tell you like red alert, there is something wrong, but it doesn't tell you what people truly need. And it doesn't substitute for some of that more interactive information gathering where you can really get the nuances of how people are doing and where they see the barriers or the assets that we have that we don't want to mess with. So I think lunging in and making up a solution without talking to the people who it would most affect is tempting, but really not the way to go. You won't get the result you want unless you're, I mean, you could be very lucky, but I think your odds are much better after you listen to people and take the time.
That's beautiful. Well, Lauren, this was lovely. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. It's been a great privilege to work together. Very grateful.
Thank you. I'm glad. Your team is so much fun to work with, and you guys are so committed.
And we have so many problems. And so, like, there's lots of good work to be done.
There's so much good work. Yeah, I guess what I really appreciate about you all, though, is that you haven't seemed daunted by the problems. I mean, you recognize the seriousness and you take it really seriously, but you've just kind of been willing to put one foot in front of the other and just kind of address things and go through a process that I think is really powerful. And so I'm really hopeful for the ultimate outcome.
Me too. I'm glad to be working on it. So thank you again.
Oh, my pleasure.
Thank you for listening to Menders. If you enjoyed this episode, please take a moment to subscribe, leave a review, and share this episode with a friend. And don't forget to head on over to mendinghealthsystems.com to get started creating cultural transformation for your healthcare team today. Let's create transformation magic.